Hello and welcome to Shooting the Breeze, episode 11, the formal gun podcast of WaltNPA.com. And as you can see, I'm alive and I made it. At the beginning of, or actually throughout episode 10, I made mention that I was feeling a little under the weather and it felt like, I don't know, the calm before the storm. Well, I woke up the next day. I recorded the podcast a day early, in fear that I wasn't going to be able to record it the following day. So I wake up the following morning just feeling like death warmed over. I wound up calling off of work and spent the entire day drinking NyQuil spritzers and sleeping away the day. I wound up spending more time asleep than I did awake. By Tuesday, I was feeling half decent. Went to work, still congested and all that. And by about Thursday, Friday, it was back to normal again. So, instincts proved right, and recording the podcast a day early wound up making the episode possible. So, I survived. I'm back. I'm in good spirits. No congestion anymore, and it's time to get episode 11 underway. But before that, or before we do that, I wanted to talk a little bit about some stuff. I had a question, or a couple of questions actually, the same question a couple of times, a suggestion, and there was something else. Oh, I wanted to talk about an upcoming feature, so to speak. So first let's talk about the feature. A couple of episodes ago I had mentioned that I was carrying a Zycar 744 cigar cut knife. Small knife, I would show it to you, except for I lost it. And I'm kind of heartbroken about it. I've had that knife for 3 or 4 years, and I bought it at the same time I was buying groomsmen's gifts. It was kind of a present to myself, but I've had it for a few years now. My wife will kill me if she ever hears this, and I don't know whether it's 3 or 4 years, but I've had that knife for a while, and it's always served me really well. Small little knife. I believe the blade was about 2 inches long, something like that. So it was small, compact, and it served me well for those years. And somehow I lost it. I don't know where, I don't know how, but I'm kind of bummed out about it. But in a couple of episodes ago, I was talking about that knife and this knife meme that I participated in amongst the gun blogs. And there was a knife collector who watches the show. I mentioned him before, the Cajun Blaze from YouTube. So we talked a little bit, and he's a knife collector, and he said he wanted to send me a couple of knives because I wasn't sure what I wanted to buy to upgrade that Zycar. And I mentioned that I was interested in the Spyderco Delica 4 due to the size and things like that. So Cajun Blaze sent me 3 knives actually, and they arrived. And the first one is a buck knife folder. I'm not sure what the handle is. It's some kind of resin or plastic. Really lightweight folding knife. No real frills to it. It carries nice. It feels nice in the hand. And it opens and operates nice and smooth. Well, when I got this knife, my wife already started eyeing it up and she wanted it. So I may have to fight her away from it. But yeah, the objective is to take these knives and carry them for a month or so, and then talk about them a little bit as everyday carry knives. Now, I'm not a knife guy, so I really can't get into specifics about the knife. I can only tell you what I liked about it, what I didn't like about it, what worked for me, and just sort of play it by ear. So the knives I'm going to be using are the buck knife folder, the knife that I've been carrying with me a lot, which is the Spyderco Delica 4, which again Cajun Blaze sent. And this is actually the knife I was looking into buying, and this thing has been fantastic. I've been carrying it around ever since I got it, and I'm really thrilled with it. Had I bought this knife back when I was kind of looking at knives to purchase as everyday carry knives, I think I would have been really happy with it. I'm really happy with it thus far. And the most incredible thing he sent me was the Spyderco Native 4, which I'm just infatuated by this knife. I don't want to carry it just yet because I'm afraid I'll scratch it or something. It handles really well. It feels fantastic. It looks incredible. I'm just fascinated by this knife, or infatuated by it. Every time it's near me, I pick it up and flick it open and play with it. And I'm driving my wife crazy because for a little while it was in the dining room. I was picking it up off the hutch and playing with it and, you know, keep opening it and closing it. But eventually I will start carrying this one once I get done with the Delica 4. I wanted to do the Buckknife first, the Spyderco Delica 4 second, and then the Native 4 third. Again, all of these knives came from Cajun Blaze. I want to thank him again. It was just a fantastic package. I'm really blown away. You really didn't have to do that. I really, really appreciate that. But I've got these three knives, and I guess I just started carrying the Delica 4 out of order. So, you know, I'll probably carry the Delica 4 for a month, 6 weeks, something like that, and then feature it on the podcast and, you know, talk about the pros and cons, what I like about it, what I didn't like about it, and then I'll I'll go through the motions and do that with all three knives. And you know, it's kind of turning me into a knife guy. I'm constantly reaching in my pocket, pulling out the knife and using it for something, finding something to use it for. I just can't resist. I love the hole in the Spyderco knives. It just makes it so easy to flip them open and closed. So that's one of the things I'm thinking about doing in the future, or what I'm planning on doing in the future. So again, thank you, Cajun Blaze. That's one of the things I wanted to talk about. The second was a question that came up a couple of times, and that is, now that I have 10 episodes, will I be joining the Gun Rights Radio Network? I got in touch with Mark from the Gun Rights Radio Network, and I talked to him a little bit about the requirements of the podcasters. You know, what's involved? Do I need to post a banner on the website? Do I need to run so many Gun Rights Radio Network advertisements throughout the show? You know, how all does this work? Because I'm interested in joining, but, you know, I want to know the finer points ahead of time. I don't want to just kind of dive into this. So I got to talking to Mark for a little while. We discussed it. The requirements seem very fair. So I submitted all my information, and I'm just kind of waiting to hear back. If I get the green light, then I'm going to roll on into the Gun Rights Radio Network. If not, it'll be a little disappointing, but, you know, life goes on. So at this point, just waiting to hear back from Mark, and then, you know, you'll know as soon as I know. With any luck, I'll get an answer by the time I record episode 12. So if I'm in, I can. So I'm kind of excited, and I want to roll into it right away. The other thing I wanted to talk about was, or before we get started, was I got a suggestion from Corey. If you pay attention to my blog, you'll notice comments pop up fairly regularly from C. Zerby. And Corey is a friend of mine. We get together every now and again to smoke cigars at a local cigar shop. And we've gotten together shooting one time. We haven't gotten together since, so I don't know whether I accidentally swept him with a muzzle or he just doesn't like me. But hopefully I didn't sweep him with a muzzle. But, you know, for one reason or the other, we need to get together to do some more shooting. But I was talking about having a little bit of difficulty coming up with news articles and self-defense articles. And Corey mentioned that since we're in an area on the east side of Pennsylvania, we've got Reading, Allentown, Philadelphia, all in, you know, relatively close proximity to us. Actually, Reading, we're practically in it. But, you know, why don't I do something local for, you know, the Pennsylvania viewers in the audience? So, you know, I thought about that, and I wasn't quite sure how I want to handle it. I definitely want to incorporate some sort of Pennsylvania news, whether or not it's a reoccurring thing, or in addition to the news that I do. I'm really not quite sure how I'm going to do it. The way it happened to work out this episode, I've got two pieces of Pennsylvania news, not on purpose. One of them was on purpose. The other one was just interesting, so I incorporated it into the news anyway. But I don't know if I want to do the regular three pieces of news and then an additional one for local news, because there's got to be something going on between Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Allentown, and Reading, and, you know, all of the larger cities in between. You know, there's just got to be some Pennsylvania news. It's just a matter of me digging it up. So if you have any input on that, whether or not you want it incorporated into the three news pieces, or if you want to see the show expanded a little bit and get a little over an hour, you know, I'm really interested in hearing your feedback on how I should handle that, or what you think. So that is all of the stuff I wanted to talk about ahead of time, and I realize I've been talking for about 10 minutes when I should have been lighting my cigar and stuff, but I'm going to take a quick break. I'll be right back, and we'll get started with the news and episode 11 of Shooting the Breeze. All right, well, it is time to roll into the news. So, first and foremost, I have an article entitled Beyond Politics, Let's Go Shooting. And this comes from the Montana Cayman, I believe it's pronounced. It is the University of Montana's independent campus newspaper since 1898. I'm not very fond of this particular website, mainly because they have like this college sports network playing in the corner. It automatically starts playing and loading and advertisements play, and it's a bit of a mess. However, the opinion article was pretty interesting, so I thought I'd read it. So, this was published on Tuesday, October 11th, and it's written by Kyle Smouch, not quite sure how to pronounce it, but it goes on to say, banning guns addresses a fundamental right of all Americans to feel safe. Unfortunately, California Senator Dianne Feinstein's misguided view on firearms is a sentiment shared by many Americans. Here in Montana, guns are an established part of our tradition and culture. Every Montanan is expected to own guns and support the Second Amendment. But why? People who advocate for strict regulations, like Senator Feinstein, either fear guns or rest their arguments on wishful thinking. Fear of guns stems from a lack of education, and cliched guns don't shoot people, people shoot people applies well here. After all, when was the last time you saw a gun jump off a table and shoot someone? Note to the idiot who shot another person on campus earlier this year, be safe and use common sense when handling firearms. The logic that people would feel safe, or the logic that people would be safe if guns were banned or highly restricted is not only flawed, it is dangerous. Take an extreme example. Say all firearms were outlawed tomorrow. Who would turn over their guns to authorities? Law-abiding citizens. Who would ignore the law and keep their weapons? Criminals. The idea behind gun control is keeping firearms away from the dangerous people. But a gun ban would only disarm law-abiding citizens, leaving them at the mercy of criminals who already break other laws. After all, law enforcement rarely shows up on the scene at the scene of a crime before a crime has been committed, and a police presence after you've been victimized is poor consolation. Granted, not all gun regulations are bad. Some things, like restricting people who are mentally unstable from buying firearms, are common sense. We should focus on enforcing existing good rules, not creating new restrictions based on flawed ideology. Besides, we already have too many laws restricting citizens' fundamental right to self-defense. For example, felons are prohibited from owning firearms, but felons' crimes vary widely. Did you know that you can get a felony for making a sparkler bomb or using a fake ID that doesn't have your own name on it? It doesn't make sense to take away the same rights from a 20-year-old college student buying beer at a gas station and a serial killer. If guns are outlawed, only the government will have guns. Only the police, the secret police, the military, the hired servants of our rulers, only the government and fellow outlaws, and a few outlaws. I intend to be among the outlaws. Edward Abbey's quote illustrates what history has repeatedly shown through events like the Holocaust and those that occurred in Soviet Russia, that an unarmed citizenry is defenseless against a tyrannical government. If our basic right to own firearms was ever taken away, you can bet that there would be more than a few outlaws in Montana, myself included. And Senator Feinstein, I feel much safer being armed than defenseless. Now, who wants to go shooting? So this is a really interesting article, and I had no idea that it was a felony to use a fake ID or make a sparkler bomb. I don't know what a sparkler bomb is, but I would hope that it's relatively harmless in the case of this article. So yeah, he makes a great point in that a 20-year-old college student using a fake ID to buy beer is a felon and has his rights stripped away just as a serial killer would. So, pretty interesting article. A lot of this echoes the way I feel about firearms. So I just wanted to share it. I thought it was well written and, you know, had a lot of valid points to it. All right, let's roll right into news item two. Now, this is the news item that I kind of pushed in here because it's Pennsylvania-based, and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, whether I wanted to add a news article to the tail end of this news segment, or if I wanted to incorporate local news into the three pieces of news. So I sort of incorporated it into the three pieces of news this time around to keep the show around the same length. So this one comes from phillyburbs.com, and it is entitled Newtown Township. Newtown Township's ban on guns in parks challenged. This was published on Sunday, October 9th, and it's written by Danny Alder. And this goes on to say, Newtown Township officials are working to fix an old law on the books that prohibits people from bringing guns into township parks after a Bucks County man said the ordinance is illegal. The township received a letter this summer from a Northampton man who claimed that a provision in the township's code violates Pennsylvania law, according to the township solicitor, Jeffrey Garten. Garten looked into the matter by reviewing some cases and speaking with the Pennsylvania State Association of Township Supervisors. All of my research indicated that he was correct, Garten said. Newtown Township Code says that no person shall bring into or upon the park system, nor have in his or her possession, any revolver, pistol, rifle, shotgun, firearm, or other weapon that discharges projectiles, either by air, explosive force, or by any other substance. State law states that no county, municipality, or township may in any manner regulate the lawful possession or transportation of firearms when carried or transported for the purposes not prohibited by the laws of the Commonwealth. We are working on revising that ordinance, Supervisor Chairman Rob Clairvaux said in a brief comment to the newspaper. Garten said that he is preparing an ordinance to rectify the issue. He said that the new township ordinance would prohibit people from discharging their firearms, which he said the township is able to regulate. Garten said that a draft of the ordinance should be before the township board of supervisors in a month or so. Officials said that prohibition provision in the ordinance dates back to at least the mid-1990s, well before any of the current supervisors were on the board. Gun rights advocates across the state have questioned local laws preventing people from carrying guns in parks in recent years, according to the news reports. And that is the end of the article. Now, if you remember a few episodes back, I talked about a Florida law that was put on the books that basically said, look, all you municipalities, townships, cities, if you don't get all of these illegal laws off the books, you know, we're going to start pressing you. The people in charge are going to be subject to fines and pulled out of office. We don't have that in Pennsylvania. So what winds up happening is we have all these different municipalities and townships and things that make up their own laws as they go. Some of them are date back from the 90s. Other ones, they just slap no gun signs up in places they don't belong and, you know, kind of do what they want. And there's no repercussions. Now, the only thing that can really happen is someone can be charged with having a firearm in that place where the state says they're permitted, but the township does not. And then they challenge it through the court system. And then they either sue the township or municipality to get the law thrown off the books and whatnot. So what you see is a lot of Pennsylvania gun activists are seeing these guns prohibited signs, and then they're contacting the mayors or the township supervisors, you know, whoever is in charge of getting these things off the books, and, you know, they're kind of pressing them. They're, look, this is illegal. I just wanted to bring it to your attention. In the event that someone is charged with a crime or charged with having a firearm in such and such a place, you know, your township, your county, you could be subject to a civil lawsuit and yada, yada, yada. Some township supervisors or committees sort of just blow it off and, you know, we're not going to change the way we're going. You know, guns aren't permitted in our parks and we don't care what the state says. And other ones seem to do something like this and they try to get the law off the books and put something else in its place. Now, I don't know what the purpose is of putting a law on the books that says you can't discharge a firearm in that municipality. I you know, maybe I could be wrong, but I thought that was a law higher up that you couldn't just go around shooting guns. So I don't know where this new law is really necessary, but you know, it's one of those interesting scenarios. So you can't discharge the gun in the park. So what happens if you're in a self-defense situation? Do the police officers kind of look the other way because it was a self-defense scenario, and they don't charge you with, or the DA doesn't charge you with firing a firearm in the park? Or, you know, how all does this work? I'm not quite sure how the legal system works with all of this no discharging firearms ordinances, but at least we have one municipality or township that is looking to get a bad law off the books and rectify the situation. I wish more places in Pennsylvania would do this. Actually, I kind of wish we would see a law kind of like Florida does, where you know, there are repercussions for putting laws on the books that really don't belong there. I mean, it's not like all of these laws are outdated. You know, when a new park is built or something, you know, you see these signs get slapped up, and you know, it's not cool. As a gun owner, I never like seeing a sign that says no guns allowed, when I know that there's no state law that says I can't bring my gun into this particular park. I mean, I'm going to carry my gun in the park, in the township park anyway, unless the state tells me otherwise. So it kind of makes me uncomfortable defying that sign, but you know, I know I'm legally permitted to. You know, there's really nothing that township can do. I mean, I guess they could charge me with something, but again, it would wind up in a civil case or something. So that is news item two, and the second one is a little more interesting, or the third one is a little more interesting. That one was kind of local centric, and it is what it is. Here comes news piece number three. Okay, so here we have news item number three. Now, this is Pennsylvania centric. However, it kind of goes a little bit beyond Pennsylvania and affects Florida as well. So I thought this would be pretty interesting. This is kind of been ongoing for a little while, but this piece comes from the Morning Call, which is a Lehigh Valley newspaper, and it was published on October 2nd, written by Paul Carpenter. And it is entitled, "Gun Control Hysteria is Unfounded." Something akin to hysteria has gripped some gun control advocates because of a fearsome combination of factors. According to Ceasefire PA and newspapers in three Pennsylvania cities, the related events are a cause for abject despair. A horrible loophole exists in the reciprocal agreement between most states, including Pennsylvania, allowing for gun permits issued in one state to be honored by other states even after a gun owner is denied a permit in his home state. A Philadelphia man took advantage of the quote-unquote loophole to obtain a gun permit from Florida, resulting in the shooting death of an unarmed teenager last year. A bill in Congress, co-sponsored by most of the Pennsylvania delegation, including U.S. Rep. Charles Dent, Republican of Lehigh Valley, would require every state to honor the gun permits issued by every other state. That, Ceasefire PA yelped on Thursday, would expand the Florida loophole to every state, allowing pistol-packing yahoos to run amok. The problem with those claims is that they are bogus. The entire premise is false. Let's start with what happened in Philly. Marcus Hill, it was reported, had his gun permit revoked by city police. That, said the Philadelphia Inquirer, happened after a 2005 confrontation with officers. He then got a permit using the quote-unquote Florida loophole, as Ceasefire PA put it. That frightening loophole, wailed the Philadelphia Daily News, resulted in 18-year-old Irving Santana getting shot full of holes by Hill. Outrageous, the paper said. How many more people have to be killed before lawmakers buck the NRA and move to keep guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them? The Lancaster Intelligencer journal New Era, blaming the reciprocity loophole for taking Santana's life, thundered that the new measure in Congress, quote-unquote, or quote, threatens to force Pennsylvania to accept reciprocity with every other state, unquote. On Wednesday, a Pittsburgh Post-Gazette editorial cited the Santana case as proof of a, quote, lunatic loophole, unquote, and said that the proposal in Congress, if enacted, will cause untold mischief and misery everywhere. Before you join the stampede to repeal the second item in the Bill of Rights, consider a few other facts. First, a gun permit had nothing to do with the Santana shooting, one way or the other. Police said Hill was in an apartment when Santana and two other thugs tried to break into his car. He bolted out of the apartment with a gun to confront them. Hill said one of the thugs also had a gun. There is no legal requirement for a permit to carry a gun that is not concealed. Permits are only for concealed handguns. Second, Hill was denied a concealed permit by police on the flimsiest of grounds. He was not convicted of any crime and was employed as a security guard. That's why he had to resort to the Florida loophole. Third, a judge threw out the weapons charges against Hill but kept the homicide charges, apparently because of excessive force. Santana had 13 holes in him. The Florida gun permit and any other reciprocal agreement between states had absolutely nothing to do with the Hill-Santana situation. Legally, the situation would be exactly the same if there were no reciprocal agreements, no loopholes, or no gun permits whatsoever. The gun control frenzy in this situation is based entirely on fraudulent arguments. A few other points need to be raised. Those who justify gun control by saying the Second Amendment applies only to a militia, which they say now refers to the National Guard, apparently cannot read. The people who drafted that amendment, notably James Madison and George Mason, explicitly and clearly defined militia as those armed citizens who are not under government control. Does that sound like the National Guard to you? In Switzerland, virtually every law-abiding citizen is armed. Mexico has a rigid gun control and only government authorities can legally be armed. In terms of crime problems, which of those two societies do you think has a better approach? Gun permits are licenses that apply only to the privilege of concealed guns. Rights and privileges are not the same. Self-defense is a right. Driving a car is a privilege. Free societies can never let government restrict rights for the sake of expediency. I'd like to see what certain newspapers would say if someone suggested that free press rights should be exercised with only a license issued by government. And that's the end of the article. And I got to applaud this guy. That's fantastic writing. Usually, when you see gun articles in like the Allentown newspaper, the Philadelphia newspaper, the Reading newspapers, they're all anti-gun, and they're never much of a pleasure to read. In this case, you know, I was just cheering this guy on as he was writing the article. Lately, it's been going on for a little while now, but there's just been screams from all of these different newspapers about this Florida loophole. And basically, what they're saying is that people that are denied license to carry firearms in Pennsylvania are then going to states like Florida and getting a non-resident permit. And then, of course, they can carry in the state of Pennsylvania because Pennsylvania honors the non-resident permit in Florida. So, you know, people are getting up in arms. Well, you know, these people are breaking the law. Well, you know, in Pennsylvania, we have, I forget how it's worded. I really should have looked it up. But there's a provision in when you apply for your license to carry firearms that says that the sheriff or the issuing party, I believe it's the sheriff in all counties, but the sheriff can deem you unfit or not. It's written in such a way that the sheriff can say, well, you know, you're not really the type of person that should be carrying a gun. I don't believe you're fit. And basically they can yank your permit or just not give you one. So for instance, for a little while, there were claims of people open carrying in Philadelphia, which is legal as long as you have a license to carry firearms, that were being stopped and harassed by police for open carrying with a license to carry, and then the police officers threatening to have their home county permits. So, for instance, if someone in Berks County, where I live, has a license to carry firearms, it's a statewide license anyway, they go to Philadelphia with their license to carry firearms and they open carry. You can only carry in Philadelphia. The law says that you must have a license to carry firearms in a city of the first class if you're going to open carry or something like that. So these people are going into the city. Philadelphia doesn't like open carry, or I shouldn't say all of Philadelphia doesn't like open carry, but the vast majority of Philadelphia doesn't seem to like open carry. So they go in, they have problems with the police, and then the police threaten to get in touch with the issuing sheriff's department and having their license pulled under these grounds, because the sheriff can determine that, or can say that, you know, this person is unfit and pull the license. And, you know, it could be anything. You know, you could get into an argument with a police officer, and then they could then press the issue with the sheriff that, hey, you know, this guy's unfit, you know, he shouldn't be carrying. I really wish I knew what the specifics said. But anyway, it's fortunately a lot of counties in Philadelphia don't operate that way. Sheriff Weikert in Berks County has been fantastic. I got my license to carry, I believe it was right before he got into office, and I think it took me about 3 weeks to get my license to carry. I printed the paperwork off from online, filled it out, sent it in, got the card back, or got the paperwork back, and then just had to go get my picture taken and stuff. However, since Sheriff Weikert has been, I believe his name is pronounced Weikert, but since he's been in office, or since he's been sheriff, he's really streamlined the process. My brother recently got his license to carry. I believe he said it took him about 15 minutes, and in my county, it is basically a why you wait situation. Head on over to the sheriff's office with all of your paperwork. They'll do the background check right there for you. If everything comes back clean, they take your picture, hand you your license, and you're good to go. And that's fantastic. In addition, he's set up satellite offices throughout the county. So if you can't get to the Reading Courthouse, where his office is, to get your license, you can instead go to a satellite office in the Reading Airport, or at the Reading Airport. They have like a trailer or something there that has extended hours. Or if you can't get there some other days during the week, this other satellite office is open. So, I mean, the guy is just a pleasure to deal with in terms of license to carry firearms in Berks County. So that is fantastic. Unfortunately, not all counties work this way. Philadelphia, I hear, is an absolute nightmare to get a license to carry out of. Delaware County, I hear, is more or less the same way. And even though Pennsylvania is a shall issue state, there are some areas where they kind of act like it is a may issue state, and they kind of pick and choose who gets a license based on that clause that, you know, this person is deemed unworthy or some. I forget how it's phrased, but basically that's how it works out. They say whether or not you're worthy to have a license. But again, this whole Florida loophole thing, and now this national thing, is got all these local papers up in arms. Oh, they're gonna the blood in the streets, the Wild West kind of a thing. I'm sure wherever you live, you've heard it before. So that's kind of what's going on in Pennsylvania. I thought that was a fantastic article written by the Morning Call. And again, I just got to applaud that article. That was great. That put a smile on my face. And that is the news. Well, now that the news is over, you're a fan of the podcast or have watched it for more than one episode, you know that now I do featured content. And much like the news, I take three pieces of content and I just kind of talk about them and urge you to go click the link and check them out. So with that said, let's roll right into the featured content and talk about the first item, which is entitled Using Pocket Pistols from Shooting Illustrated, or Using Pocket Pistols, and it's from the Shooting Illustrated blog. And what this is it's video from gunsight instructor Ed Head demonstrating the proper ways to handle an ultra-compact pistol for self-defense. Now, I watched this video, or I was intrigued by this video, because I pocket carry. I find it more convenient in certain situations. And ever since seeing a couple of blog posts about how difficult it is to get the weapon out of your pocket, and seeing that video, I believe, posted by Miguel over at Gun Free Zone, where there was a robbery and the woman was barricading the door with her body and fighting a gun out of her pocket. You know, it's kind of made me interested in seeing how training would work for these small little mouse guns or backup guns. And, you know, I thought it would be pretty cool to check this out. So I watched it from start to finish, and it's pretty interesting. They don't really go into a lot of training and tactics. Because this is a gunsight course, obviously, if you want the information, you've got to go to gunsight and pay for it, pay for the instruction. you know, hands-on instruction. You're not just going to get it from watching a free video online. But he goes into talking about, you know, why these guns are difficult to handle. You know, because they're so small, you know, they have small frames. You know, they're sort of micro and compact and really difficult to operate. And the video shows a couple of people going through one of the courses and how the course of fire works and things like that. And the interesting thing about what I'm seeing in this video is every one of the people using the small pocket pistols, they all seem to have a laser. The Smith & Wesson Bodyguard comes with a laser. The Kel-Tec comes with an optional, well, it's an aftermarket laser. I don't know if it's actually made by Kel-Tec or Crimson Trace, but a lot of what you're seeing in this video is all, you know, you see the laser come out as the people are operating the guns and things like that. So it's interesting to see training in which you're using that laser actively. With my Smith & Wesson Bodyguard, I mean, I guess I could train it in my muscle memory to use my index finger to hit the laser button. However, there's not a real hard defined click or anything like that. So if you hit the button, you don't know whether the laser is going to go on or not unless you actually see the dot. There's no real report. You don't feel it click or anything like that. You just kind of hit the button, and sometimes the laser goes on, sometimes you need to hit it a couple more times. So when I've been training with the Bodyguard, I actually haven't been using it, and the only time I've planned on using that laser is if it were dark and, you know, I couldn't really see the front sights well. So when I practice with my backup or my pocket pistol, the Smith & Wesson Bodyguard, I'm using the sights, and I'm actually practicing really close. So a lot of times I may not even be using the sights. I mean, I'm close enough to reach out there, and if I miss at the range that I'm at, something's got to be wrong. So I'm training really close. I'm practicing a little further back where I have to actively use the sights and things like that. But personally, I think if it ever came down to it, the only time I would try to get that laser on is if it were dark and I may not be able to fully see those sights. So it was really interesting seeing this video at an accredited training facility, but they are very well known, and they're held in high regards by a lot of people. So to see some video on properly using these type of weapons in a training situation, I thought was pretty cool, and it was definitely worth checking out. So click the link, head over to Shooting Illustrated, and watch the video from Gunsight. All right, the second piece of feature content that I have is actually kind of a twofer. Both of these come from the same blog, and I didn't want to break it up into featured content piece 2 and featured content piece 3 from the same blog. So I kind of combined them because they're relevant to one another, and they're kind of interesting. They both come from Miguel over at Gun Free Zone, and I really like Miguel. He seems like a really cool guy. He puts out a lot of information. I follow his blog on Google Reader. He's got multiple updates throughout the course of a day. A lot of his stuff is short and sweet. Some of it's really interesting and thought-provoking. Some of it's kind of just funny and a little, you know, gun-related picture. And, you know, it's kind of got a real easygoing groove to it. It's a blog that I just enjoy reading. And he did two articles on IDPA. The first one was entitled IDPA, Whining and Assorted Crap, where basically he goes through some of the things that he hears at IDPA matches that get kind of old, where, you know, you hear these common phrases where, you know, like, the rules are too confusing, there are too many rules, so, you know, why do I have to shoot from behind cover? The sport is not fast enough and the round count is too low. So it's kind of like these little whiny arguments that he hears throughout the match. And his basic response, you know, well, the rules are too confusing. Well, you're not being asked to write a paper about the philosophical ramifications of the rules. Just follow them. And he goes through all these points. And it's kind of fun. It's interesting. I shoot USPSA. I've never done an IDPA match. I've got a preface that by saying I've only shot two USPSA matches, but every now and again you hear little complaints and here and those, and when you hear those little complaints, they're always the same thing. Well, you know, that shot's too far, that's for rifles, that's not for that, you know, that's not meant for USPSA, or things like that. And it's just sort of interesting where in both sports you get the same sort of little complaints, and he just kind of addresses them as if he's just gotten tired of hearing them over and over and over and over again. The second one is entitled IDPA Safety Officer Tips, and basically he goes through He goes through some of the things that you will encounter as a range officer, as a safety officer, and then he sort of adds a little bit of information to it. So, for instance, point one, learn the damn rules and keep the rule book nearby. And why is he saying this? Well, because you will eventually interact with a range lawyer, defined as a shooter, that will try to eke an advantage by arguing the rules rather than shooting better, and he goes on and on and on. And he, you know, and it's not like he's complaining about these things. He's telling you things that you're going to experience as a safety officer, and here is why you're going to experience them, and this is why you should prepare for such and such a complaint popping up or an issue popping up. So I thought it was pretty interesting, mainly because I'm interested in becoming a USPSA safety officer or a range officer. I kind of would like to be the guy with the timer, and the reason being, you get a bit more responsibility added onto you. I'm a new shooter. However, I think that because this is a volunteer sport, you know, next season or the season after, I would like to get into taking a safety officer certification course, and it forces you to know the rules better. Obviously, I could know the rules better by not being a safety officer, but I just think it gives you a more interesting, finer look into the sport, and it sort of allows you to break it down a bit more, or it forces you to break it down a bit more as you're really watching each individual shooter and you're assessing what they're doing, things like that. So because it's a volunteer sport, I would kind of like to help out, and you know, at some point, whether or not it's two seasons into shooting or three seasons into shooting, I would like to become a USPSA safety officer at some point in time. And you know, I thought this kind of related to me, even if I'm not looking at becoming an IDPA shooter or safety officer. So there is kind of some overlap between the sports, and I thought both of these articles were interesting. So head over to Gun Free Zone. I'll provide both links, and you can check them both out. And after you get done checking out these two posts, look at all the other stuff that Miguel has over at Gun Free Zone, and subscribe to his RSS feed. He's got tons of content, and I'm sure you'll find plenty of stuff that you'll enjoy. Well, it's time for the last piece of featured content, and this one's kind of interesting. It seems to have created a bit of a ripple in the gun blogosphere, and it's kind of interesting to see all of the reactions. Some people seem very, very upset by it, and other people just seem to kind of be laughing at it. And that is a recent video released by Hornady. A few weeks ago, they released this little teaser video saying that something was coming. And I believe they showed video of a guy's in like a junkyard, and you know, there's some commentary. You know, you've got the serious narrator talking over this guy who's sort of crouched down beside a junker car, and he pulls out a 1911 or something. And then the video abruptly ends, and it says, like, coming soon. You know, something coming soon. And then a couple of weeks later, which may have been something like last week, Hornady extended that video, and then they showed you what they were promoting, which was basically this Zombie Max ammunition. So the video continues where, you know, he pulls the gun out, he points it, and then they cut to a zombie scene. You see a hand reaching out of the ground, and then, you know, zombies are coming out of the woodwork. They're coming at him from all directions throughout the junkyard, and he starts shooting them. And then, you know, at the end, they're talking about this Zombie Max ammunition, you know, built for the zombie apocalypse. It's not intended for human targets. It's for the undead only. And they're really, really pushing that this ammunition is for zombies. It's got kind of cool packaging. It says Zombie Max on the box and things. It's got a green, I don't know whether it's like a polymer tip, but the tip of the bullet is green. And after that video was released, I thought it was kind of cool. I shared it on Google+, and there were a couple of blogs that I started seeing pop up talking about this video, and then there were a couple more and a couple more, and you, on one side, you see people getting really upset. You know, they're saying that Hornady is jumping the shark. Here's a serious company with a serious product, and now they've released this gimmick, and you know zombies are so last week, you know, the new cool thing is this. So, you know, zombies are the equivalent of shimmering vampires, and they're getting upset at at Hornady for releasing this gimmicky product. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have people that are kind of looking at it like I am. It's just kind of funny. It's a gimmicky product. It is what it is. So I looked into it. I think it's I think a box of 9mm was something like $16. And from what I understand, it's kind of a repackaged product. Apparently, from what I read, it's a product that wasn't selling really well. It was like an underweight bullet in an underpowered cartridge, and they just kind of took the green polymer tip or the red polymer tip off the bullet. They put a green polymer tip on it, and then they slapped it in this Zombie Max box. So you've got this gimmicky product that some people seem to be getting really upset about. I mean, I read a couple of blog posts where it sounded like there were a group of people ready to take up arms, you know, grab their pitchforks and torches and mount and march on the Hornady office building. And then, again, on the other side, you've got people that's kind of laughing it off. And then, of course, you've got people in the middle. And you know, there's just a variety of stuff, and I thought it was really interesting, all this combative, and not really combative, but, you know, back and forth talking about this product. And it is a gimmick, but you need to look at, personally, I'm looking at it like this. It's around Halloween. They're coming out with a gimmicky zombie product around Halloween. It's a product that's not moving. If it is a product that's not moving, they're just repackaging it to get rid of it. They're not selling it at the price of some of the other personal defense products. At least I remember paying more for personal defense. I guess it's FPD, Hornady ammunition. I think Critical Defense is a little bit more than this other stuff. So, I mean, they don't seem to be hitting you really hard for this stuff. Then again, I could be wrong. I don't know what the price structure is for Hornady product. But, you know, it just seems kind of cool. I mean, if I were to walk into... I personally wouldn't order this stuff. But if I walked into a gun shop and there was a box of Zombie Max ammunition sitting on the shelf, for $16, I might buy it. And... why, you know, I'm not going to go buy it to take to the range and start blasting off, or load it in my personal defense weapon. But, you know, it's just one of those kind of gimmicky things you stick on a shelf. I mean, I kind of see it the same way I see this print behind me. It's a print from the Oatmeal on, you know, the pluses and minuses of working from home. I got another one on the origin of beer, you know, a comical cartoon. You know, it's just sort of decor. You know, if you've got gun related stuff in your man room or your man cave or your gun room, you know, why not add a little Zombie Max box of ammunition? It's a talking point. It's a deadly talking point or dangerous talking point, but it's kind of cool nonetheless. It's just a decor item, I would think. I mean, I don't know how many people are actually going to take this stuff out and use it. And Hornady just keeps harping on that, you know, this is for zombies only. Not like the zombie apocalypse is really coming, but it's just kind of one of those gimmicky cool things. If in December Hornady announced that they were coming out with Grinch Max ammunition, and it had a red and white sort of candy cane sort of polymer tip on it, and it was gear and it was in Christmassy packaging meant only for the Grinch if he decided to attack your house and steal your Christmas presents, I would look at that exactly the same way, and I might put that on my shelf as well. So, I really don't mind a company coming out with a seasonal gimmicky product, you know, as long as they're marketing it as a gimmicky product, and they are. You know, they're saying that this is for zombies only. This isn't for personal defense. You know, this isn't for human targets or anything like that. So, you know, this isn't for target shooting. So, you know, I don't know. I kind of see it the same way you see snow globes and stuff. You just buy a box and stick it on a shelf. It is what it is. I don't know. I thought the video was... The video was well done. You know, it's kind of kind of a played out tired scenario that they show in a junkyard with zombies coming at them. But the product itself, I think, is kind of cool. Even if you'll never use it and it may or may not be a waste of money. I don't know. I think it's kind of cool. And I really hope they do come out with a Grinch Max, because if they do something like gimmicky every year and make it a collectible item, I don't see a problem with that whatsoever. I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm looking at this from a completely different angle. But hit up the comment section and tell me what you think of the Zombie Max ammunition. Is this something that you would buy to stick on a shelf? buy just to have, you know, just for that little gimmicky factor. I mean, zombies seem to be big with shooters. You got zombie targets, you got these three-dimensional bleeding zombie targets that people buy. It's, you know, it's it seems to be part of the gun culture. So if a company is going to try to get rid of, I don't know, stock that's sitting around, if they're just slapping a new bullet or a new polymer tip in it, and they need to move this stuff out of inventory, you know, I don't really see a problem with it. But again, hit up the comment section and tell me what you think of the Zombie Max ammunition. Also, tell me what you think of that Grinch Max ammunition, because I don't know, I kind of want to get me a box of that. All right, well, now it is time for the cigar and drink pairing of the episode. And due to my rambling and editing on the fly in between clips, I managed to smoke this behemoth of a cigar down beyond the band, which is something I really didn't want to do. I kind of want to have the band on it when I do this thing, but this particular cigar is the Nestor Miranda Special Selection Dano, which is, I believe it's the 20th anniversary. This cigar is from the 20th anniversary edition. A couple of years ago, Miami Cigar did this really interesting thing. I think it was a great marketing strategy. They took all of their Nestor Miranda Special Selection dealers, and they sent them a box of Dano, or at least one box of Dano. And there were instructions that said, any customer that comes in and buys any cigar from you is entitled to one Nestor Miranda Special Selection Dano for Nestor Miranda Day. And it was a great way to get the product out into the hands of new consumers. It probably cost the company a lot of money to do this. However, it seemed to go over really, really well. Twitter was ablaze over this whole thing. People were trying to find stores that hadn't run out of stock and get out and get their free Dano. I wasn't able to get out to a store to get my free Dano. However, because I had a relationship with my local retailer, he held two for me. And, you know, I really appreciated that. And that's one of the benefits of having a local shop that you frequent a lot. When something like this comes out and, you know, he has the opportunity to hold something for you, you know, they can, or he or she, but they can, and that's fantastic. So, this cigar is a couple of years old. It's been sitting in my humidor for a while, and I really didn't want to smoke it when I got it, because the cigar is, I did want to smoke it, however, I was looking for the right time. Not because it's a special cigar or anything like that, because it's a behemoth. I mean, it could double as a billy club. It's like 56 or 58 ring gauge by about 7 inches long. It takes a lot of time to smoke this cigar. And it's just a really big time investment. So it wasn't until about a month ago I finally dug one out and smoked it because I had time, and I really enjoyed it. Back before that, I got a couple of them from Mike over at Buckhead. I believe his have a Buckhead band on it. I don't know whether it's the same blend or if it's different for Buckhead cigar, but I really, really enjoyed that cigar, and I was kind of eager to get some more, and I knew I had the 20th anniversary around. So when I found them in the humidor, I was kind of eager to light one up. They're medium-bodied. They're kind of one-dimensional in the sense that there isn't a whole lot of flavor change throughout the cigar, and that's a whole lot of cigar to have one consistent flavor. However, it doesn't seem to get boring. I kind of like it. The flavor level changes a little bit. Sometimes it gets a little more flavorful. Sometimes it sort of simmers down. But there aren't any real drastic flavor changes. What you get when you light up the cigar is pretty much what you get when you put the cigar out. It's very consistent. Some people find those types of cigars very boring, and typically I am one of those people. I like lots of flavor changes. However, this cigar just kind of works for me. I like it. It's a laid-back, easygoing cigar. I don't remember what they cost. I think they're around $9. You're getting a lot of cigar for that money. I don't know if the newer ones have the 20th anniversary label on them. However, I don't think they have changed in terms of blend. I believe they are, these, as well as the newer production cigars, are made by Don Pepin Garcia in the My Father factory in Nicaragua. I'm not quite sure what the makeup is. I think it's all Nicaraguan tobaccos. But again, they're medium body. They don't assault the palate. They're nice, easygoing cigars. I can smoke these things in the morning, in the evening. You know, they're not overwhelming in the morning, and in the evening, there's enough oomph behind them to make them enjoyable. Some cigars are just they're really good in the morning, but when it comes to smoking them in the evening, they're just too mild, and they can't stack up to everything that's hit your palate from the time you woke up until you lit up the cigar. This cigar does really well and seems to fit the groove anywhere in the day. Now, I'm not quite sure what the production is. I don't see these cigars very often. Actually, matter of fact, last time I was at my local cigar shop, it's been a little while. I believe there was a box of Dano on the shelf, and I think they were between $8 and $9. If you're interested in trying them, I know that Mike over at Buckhead has some variety of the Dano. Whether or not it's the standard Dano or if it's one with a Buckhead band on it, I'm sure that Mike has them, or at least he had them at one point in time, and he didn't seem like he was concerned about running out of them. So they seem like a standard production stick that he's got on a regular basis. So if you're interested in trying them, pick up the phone and give Mike a call over at Buckhead. His number is 404-844-0400. You can also reach him at Buckhead Cigar on Twitter. And his website is Ask the Cigar Guys. And basically there is where he has a listing of the items that are on sale. You don't order online. You pick up the phone, you call him, you give him your information. He packs his stuff up and ships it out to you. And I know I mentioned Buckhead a lot. Buckhead Cigar isn't a paid advertiser, but Mike has really taken care of me. I had a really good relationship with Kensington Tobacconist, which was a local retailer in the Reading area. I used to go there every week, and I went there for about 4 years. Well, business wasn't doing so well, and Kensington closed. And it really didn't have a home shop anymore. And when I was looking for someone to fill that void, to be my local retailer, there were other shops in the area, but they had some issues here and there, or they were too far away. There was just, for one reason or another, they weren't the perfect fit. However, Mike just seems to have always wanted my business and treats me really well. If I need something, I just send him a note on Twitter. Hey, Mike, do you have such and such in stock? And if so, can you send me a 5-pack? Can you send me a box? Sure, no problem. I've got them in stock. I'll ship them today. Pick up the phone, call them, pay the man, and my stuff shows up in a priority box, packaged really well with humidity packs and stuff. And stuff is ready to smoke when I get it. So I've been really, really happy with Mike over at Buckhead, and that's why I push him so much. He's just been really good as a retailer. He's a really nice guy. I've met him a handful of times for big trade shows and stuff like that. And I really like Mike, and I really want to push his business because he's treated me really well as a customer. And and everyone that orders from Mike seems to have that same impression of him. He treats them really well, and I'm happy to talk about Mike and tell you to head over to Buckhead to buy your Nestor Miranda Special Selection Dano. Now, with all that stuff out of the way, the beverage that I'm pairing this with is coffee. Nothing special. I just kind of felt like having a cup of coffee. And this stuff is new to me. My wife was over at Sam's Club, and she saw this big, giant box of Keurig coffee. I guess at first glance, she thought it was a variety pack, so she picked it up and bought it. And it wasn't until after she got home that she realized that she got 80 canisters of the same coffee. So it's kind of one of those things where we better like it. It turns out to be a little mild for my taste, but it's pretty good nonetheless. It's Caribou Coffee Daybreak. It's a morning blend coffee. Again, kind of easy going, not a really bold roast, but it's going well with the coffee, and no complaints here. I mean, it could be a little bolder, but I got 80 canisters. I better like this stuff. So there is your cigar and drink pairing for the episode, and I guess now it's about time to roll into the featured discussion topic, close out the show, and let you be on your way. So sit tight. All right, the featured discussion topic for this particular episode may or may not really fit into the whole cigar, or the whole cigar blog, the whole Shooting the Breeze gun blog format, or gun podcast format. And I wanted to talk about it anyway. It kind of relates to it. Back when I was younger, I was into archery. It was a sport that I really enjoyed. It was something I did with my grandfather, with my cousins, with my brother, my father. It was a pastime that we did for a long period of time, for a couple of years, up until my family moved out of the Philadelphia area, and then I just kind of never got around to it. Well, in that time when I was into archery, I was always interested in getting involved in hunting. I never have. It's just one of those things that I've just never really been able to do or find the time to get involved and try it. So over the years, I've been telling myself, you know, I wanna get involved in hunting. You know, I wanna give it a try, do something. You know, I like venison. You know, I want nothing more than to be able to bag my own deer and have my own meat in the freezer. But in Pennsylvania, there was a regulation that said that unless you had a hunting license prior to a certain date, you needed to attend a mandatory hunter safety course. Now, I never had a hunting license and I had to take this hunter safety course, and I never got around to doing it. Well, like last year, I thought, you know what, I want to do this, but there were no classes available at that point in time, so I kind of pushed it off. And this year, I decided I really want to do this, and it's about time that I finally kind of got off my ass and took this course. So this past weekend, I signed up. Actually, I had to sign up like a month and a half ago, and I wound up taking the hunter safety course this weekend, and it was kind of, because I waited so long to register, all of the classes in my area were filled to capacity. So I had to go about half hour, 45 minutes away to this other class up in Schuylkill County. And it was taught over 2 days. There was 4 days or 4 hours on Friday night, 8 hours on Saturday. It was all classroom instruction. It got kind of long, but I thought it was really interesting, and it was really, really heavy on the safety aspect. I mean, you don't go to these classes and learn how to hunt. You go to these classes and you learn how to be a safe, ethical hunter. And where it sort of falls in line with the whole gun blog thing is there is a really heavy portion of the class dedicated to firearm safety, archery safety, things like that. And I found the firearm safety portion of the class really interesting. I mean, I took an NRA basic pistol safety class. I've shot rifle before. I'm really comfortable with the idea of shooting rifle, shooting pistol, and, you know, I'm comfortable with the practice. So I really didn't think it was completely necessary. However, I really didn't mind a refresher. If, you know, there's nothing wrong with a refresher on safety, regardless of how much experience you have. So I went to this class, and I actually wound up learning a lot about muzzleloaders and flintlocks and how they operated and the different parts of the guns and things like that. And, you know, I got a chance to see, you know, some guns that I had never fired before and had only seen pictures of. They had an example of a flintlock muzzleloader. They had an example of an inline muzzleloader, things like that. You know, they had pictures and diagrams and video showing you how each muzzleloader operated, and then they had a variety of rifles, lever action, brake action, bolt action, different types of shotguns, pump shotguns, semi-auto shotguns, brake action shotguns. And, you know, I thought it was great being able to sort of take a little refresher course on firearm safety. Now, this class was designed for the young hunter. It's 12 hours is a lot of time, especially that 8-hour day. That was a really long day for a class geared towards, you know, 11 to like 16 year olds. So, you know, the stuff is, you know, they have skits and stuff, and it's very friendly to the younger crowd. It was kind of boring in sections for me, just kind of sitting there twiddling my thumbs, but I thought it was a really interesting class, and, you know, I really appreciated the firearm safety part of it. It was kind of interesting because their outlook was a little bit different than what I was accustomed to with NRA safety. So basically, for firearm safety, they had a SMART system, and I don't remember exactly what all the letters were, but it was like one, I believe it's 4 NRA safety rules. Muzzle control, keep your finger off the trigger, know your target and what's beyond, and always treat the gun as though it's loaded. And I believe that's 4. But the hunter safety course, I believe, was 5. And I think there was like a double emphasis on respecting the firearm and treating it as though it was loaded at all times. So it was, again, really interesting in that sense, because it was really heavy on safety. And I think it taught the younger crowd, well, even the older people that were there, or my age and older. There were, I think the average age in the room was about 15 out of about 75 students, I think they said they had. So, you know, I think this was a great, great way to give the younger crowd not so much hands-on safety, but really good safety instruction. All of the firearms that they had there, they had them up at the front of the classroom on the stage. They all had firing pins removed. They had the big giant yellow sticker or orange stickers on them, you know, inert firearms. And anyone was welcome to come up and handle the firearms. And all of the four instructors that were there at all times were, you know, more than willing to show the students the firearms and teach them how to properly handle them and reinforce the safety aspects of them. So before the instructor ever handed the young student the firearm, he made them ask, you know, is this firearm loaded? And then, you know, the instructor would say no, and you hand them the firearm. And, you know, they would make sure that the muzzle was always pointed in a safe direction. Even though the firing pin was out and there was no way that this firearm would fire, you know, they really emphasized safety. And I think that was a great way to teach the kids in the audience. None of the older people went up and handled any of the stuff. I would imagine most of them had experience with all of these firearms. But, again, you know, not really related to the gun blog thing because it's a hunter safety course and it's geared towards learning being a safe and ethical hunter. But, you know, I was really impressed with all of the safety portion of the class, especially on the emphasis on firearms. So, again, I think it was a great way to get younger people into the sport of firearms, whether it be hunting or trapping or whatever. I guess you wouldn't be, well, you would use the firearm after the trap to dispatch the animal. But, you know, I think it was great for everyone in the audience. And it was completely free to Pennsylvania residents. So if you are in Pennsylvania and you are interested in hunting, or even if you're not really interested in hunting, take one of these classes. They're free. Just go online to the Pennsylvania website, state website, sign up, show up for the class. Get free instruction on firearms and hunting safety, and make the best of it. Enjoy it. Take your kids. All of them seem to have a great time. So, again, not really related to the gun blog kind of thing, but it was something I did, and I really enjoyed it nonetheless. So, there is going to be the end of the show. I got kind of long-winded. This looks like it's going to be about an hour and 10 minutes, an hour 12 minutes, something like that. So, a little bit longer than the usual episode, but I want to thank you for sitting through it and making it out to the end. You can pat yourself on the back for that. Appreciate it. Again, thank you for watching and the continued support of the Shooting the Breeze podcast from waltnpa.com. I look forward to your feedback on my blog, on YouTube, pretty much anywhere that you can find me. You know, I'm kind of all over the place. Facebook, Twitter, Google+, my blog, YouTube. So again, thanks for watching, and until next time, take it easy.